Well, this may come as a shock to some of you. Brace yourselves. I am not a candidate for Husband of the Year. It's true. Okay. It's close, but I'm not a candidate yet. But I have to say, I'm much better than I used to be. I'm not the man I once was. See, I've grown as a man. I've grown as a follower of Jesus. I've grown as a husband. You know, I remember our first year of marriage as if it were just 19 years ago. That fresh in my mind. But I remember one day my lovely bride and I were driving in the car. We were doing a bunch of errands, and I was being a world-class jerk to her. I mean, I was mad at her. I was mad at every other driver. I was mad at every red light we ran into. I was just mad, and I was taking it out on her. I was poking at her, saying mean, harsh things to her and about other people, and she was just getting upset. You'd think I would have gotten a clue when she got really, really quiet. Then I heard a sniffle. Then another sniffle. And another one. Like, she's crying! What does she got to cry about? I'm this great husband. I'm running errands with her, going wherever she wants me to go, going back to this store to return this other item that she didn't want. She bought anyway. I was going crazy. And so I said the words that no man should ever say to his wife. Oh, well, you're going to cry now? It's like, I told you I was a jerk, right? You know, in 19 years of marriage, my wife has raised her voice to me precisely one time. Only on one occasion has my wife ever raised her voice. She told me right there in that car, under no circumstances, that yes, she was going to cry. She was going to cry, and there was nothing I could do about it. She was going to cry because she was married to a big, fat jerk who pushed her to the brink of tears constantly. That's not quite true. She didn't say I was fat. I was scared to death in that car. She had never talked to me like this. I mean, I was pressed up against the window driving. I couldn't stop the car because as soon as I put the car in park, she was going to kill me. I just knew it. This woman had lost her mind. I'd pushed her way too far. Well, times have changed. I've grown and matured. See, now when I make her cry, I just let her cry. So instead of mocking her for it. We're open and transparent at New City, right? Well, marriage has a way of making us more like Jesus. See, that's actually one of the purposes of marriage. So this morning, we're going to take a look at what the Apostle Paul has to say about marriage, and in the coming weeks about other aspects of the home life. But we're going to see what he has to say from his perspective. But before we get to our text this morning, let me give you some quick background. When we think family, or when we think household today, we typically think nuclear family, right? You have father, mother, and children living together. That's what a family is supposed to be. That's a fairly recent idea in human history. In the ancient world, family meant an entire household, which would include father, mother, and children, but would often include grandparents and maybe siblings of the guy who owned the home, and certainly would include servants in the countries where that had slavery, which is most ancient countries, that would include slaves. They were part of the family. Now, in ancient literature, we find a number of household codes. A household code is just a list of instructions that regulated the behavior of the various people in the household. In Paul's day, a household code was generally much larger, much bigger deal than we would probably give it today. Aristotle was one of the first to come up with it. And he divided a household up into three groups. You had the father, or the husband, and then the wife. You had the father, and then the children. You had the master, and then the slave. And that was the importance in the household. Really, the key person in any household was the husband, father, master. Usually was the same person. Now, the goal of a household code was to regulate the behavior of the household. You see, it was important for society to function properly, for each individual household to function properly. So the man of the house had to make sure that he kept his wife under control, he had to make sure he kept his children under control, and he had to make sure he kept his slaves under control. If he did that, then his house was a productive house that benefited society. See, as a husband, father, and master, the owner of the home was the absolute ruler over all of his property. And that included the people who lived with him. They too were his property. Well, Paul gives a household code to us in Ephesians and in Colossians, but he follows the general pattern of husband, wife, father, children, master, slave, but he does so in a way that is absolutely extraordinary. Remember why he's writing to the Colossians. He's writing to remind them of who the cosmic Christ is, the Lord and Creator of everything that has been created, the one for whom all things exist. We know that God created marriage in the beginning. He determined its design. He determined its purpose. But since man rebelled against God, we've been corrupting marriage with sin and with our selfishness. And so Paul's instructions in this household code in Colossians is designed to undo those things. It's designed to remove the sin and selfishness from the household as we seek to honor the cosmic Christ. Well, we're going to break our text up into three parts today. Today we're going to look at the issue of marriage. Next week, we're going to look at parenthood. And then a couple weeks after that, we're going to skip a week, do something else. We're going to look at the issue of slavery. Let me just say this about slavery. We'll talk a lot more about it in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. But today, let me just say that when Paul gives instructions to slaves and masters, he is not in any way endorsing the institution of slavery. Not at all. Any more than Moses was endorsing divorce when he gave rules for divorce. Look, you're going to do it anyway. Here's the proper way. Here's the way that you do it so that you cause the least damage. So that's really what's going on here when he talks about slavery. We'll talk more about that in a few weeks. So turn with me, if you would, to Colossians chapter 3. If you have one of the black Bibles the church provides, it's page 984. Colossians 3, we're going to look, start verse 18. We're going to read through chapter 4, verse 1, and then we're going to focus on the first couple of verses. Paul writes this: "Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Slaves, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your slaves justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master in heaven." Now, if you were familiar with household codes in the ancient world, you would notice something striking about this one. Paul addresses wives, children, and slaves first. It's striking that he even addresses wives, children, and slaves, but that he addresses them first in each relationship is mind-boggling. That didn't happen in the ancient world. In other secular household codes, we've uncovered a number of them in ancient documents, but in those other secular household codes, it was all about husbands controlling their wives, fathers controlling their children, and masters controlling their servants. There was no reciprocal sort of response. You just did what you were told when you were told to do it. But here, Paul is directly addressing wives, he's directly addressing children, and he's directly addressing slaves, and he does that as equals. See, Paul isn't talking down to any group of people in this text. See, they are not mere property to be controlled, but they are moral agents with full dignity as image bearers of God. They are not inferior to the husband, to the father, or to the master, but they stand with him as equals. See, Paul doesn't address the husbands and fathers and masters as if they were superior to everyone else in their household, but he addresses them as co-equals with them, equal in dignity and honor before the Lord. They're partners in the marriage or in the household relationships. Now, we're going to see more of that as we work our way through the text. This morning, we're going to focus on verses 18 and 19. And I have to say that I'm going to say some things today that may make some of you uncomfortable. But I want you to know that it makes me just as uncomfortable. Because if I had to pick probably the least qualified person to stand up here and tell anybody about marriage, you're looking at them, right? Particularly because I'm the teacher, and James tells us that we shouldn't want to be teachers because teachers are going to undergo a stricter standard of judgment. And so as I tell you what God expects out of marriage, know that I fall far short. And so I'm there with you if you're feeling uncomfortable. We're in this together. Let me say this also. If you are single, maybe you've never been married or you never plan to marry, this message is still for you because the goal of marriage is the same as the goal of singlehood. It's holy living. Jesus wants us to live with Him in mind, live with our lives focused on Him and His glory. Now, for many of us, God uses marriage to make us more like Jesus. And so in marriage, we actually discover just how bad our sins really are. We see how ugly we are in our sin, and it's far uglier than we could ever imagine. But in marriage, we also see how beautiful God is as we learn to love one another, as we learn to care for one another, as we learn to sacrifice and live our lives for another person. Here's how Tim Keller put it. He wrote this. When over the years, someone has seen you at your worst and knows you with all your strength and flaws, yet commits him or herself to you wholly, it is a consummate experience. To be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. To be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. The instructions that Paul gives for marriage in verses 18 and 19 are still applicable even if you are single. See, a woman who is single should still strive to be the sort of woman who would submit to her husband if she were married. And the man who is single should strive to be the sort of man who would love his wife if he were married. So the application is still the same. We still strive to honor Jesus in all that we do and how we live our lives. Now, Paul begins this section with an instruction for wives. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Now, we've been looking at the spiritual family, how we ought to live in community. Here, Paul says, look, this truth of the great cosmic Christ, this great truth of who Jesus is and what he's done, it also impacts how we live in our physical families. It's not that the spiritual family trumps and undoes the whole idea of a physical family, but it complements it. They both work hand in hand. Paul says, in the physical family, the way that a wife honors the cosmic Christ is by submitting to her husband. Now, let me say right up front that this is not popular, right? This is not the sort of thing that people in our culture are like, yeah, the 1950s all over again, women in subjection and in oppression under the yoke of their husband. That's not what is going on here. It's widely rejected in our culture that it's backwards and for a different era. But do you see how Paul frames the instruction? He says, wives are to submit to their husbands as is fitting. Now, that phrase, as is fitting, really has the idea of, like, everybody knows this, right? It is fitting for a wife to submit to her husband because everybody gets that. Now, this is the ancient world talking, right? It seems to be that Paul is pointing to culture itself. Look, everybody knows that this is true. Wives, submit to your husbands. Duh. But do you see how he frames it, how he qualifies it? He says, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. What appears to be a cultural reference is completely unrelated to culture. Paul says it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. The reason a wife submits to her husband is because it is proper in the Lord for her to do so. Now, what is it? It's not based on culture. It's actually based on God Himself. Now, what does it mean for a wife to submit? Well, first we have to remember that a wife submits to her own husband. So when God gives an instruction to my wife to submit to me, he's not telling my wife to submit to Devo, any more than he's telling Devo's wife to submit to Eric. It's wives, submit to your husbands. So the submission that we're talking about is limited to the marriage relationship. What does it mean, though, to submit? Well, look at verse 20. Children, obey your parents. Verse 22, slaves, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters. Back up to verse 18. Wives, submit to your husbands. Now, next week we're going to see that a child must obey his parents. Frankly, parents, as the qualification, because I said so, is a legitimate reason for your child to obey. They have no choice in the matter. They must obey you. We'll see that next week. So be here, kids. That's not what verse 18 is talking about. Paul doesn't say, wives, obey your husbands like a child obeys his parent or like a slave obeys his master. There's a different qualitative difference in a wife's response to her husband. Do you see the dignity inherent in what Paul is saying? When a wife submits to her husband, there is dignity in it. You see, one does not submit to one's superiors. That's not submission, that's obedience. Do it because I told you to do, and that's the only reason you have to do it. I'm bigger, stronger, more powerful, whatever, than you are. That's not what submission is. Paul says the woman, the wife, must submit to her husband as his equal, willingly following his leadership. Now, the command for a wife to submit can only be given to one who is equal. You can't submit if you're inferior. It's not submission. Your dog doesn't submit to you. Your dog obeys you. Paul is saying that in order for this marriage thing to work properly, one of the two equals must willingly follow the leadership of the other. Now, in his letter to Timothy, Paul said that the reason for this is based not on a qualitative difference between husband and wife, but because of the order God created them. God made Adam first, therefore Eve was to be in submission to Adam. That's all. It has nothing to do with superiority or inferiority. It has nothing to do with capability or in some sort of inherent aptitude for leadership. Paul says the man was created first, and so God wants the woman to follow the leadership of her husband. Now, Paul is not talking down to women here. He's not trying to keep women in their place. He's addressing women as equals with all the dignity inherent in being created in the image of God. Here's what Paul's really saying to wives. He's saying, wives, be like Jesus. When a wife submits to her husband, she is being like Jesus. Look what Paul wrote in his letter to the Corinthians. He said, but I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ. That makes sense, right? Jesus is far greater than we men are. And so, of course, Jesus is our head. Jesus determines how we live our lives. Jesus is the one that we look to for guidance. We follow Jesus because he's greater. But then he says, the head of a wife is her husband. Seems to be the same sort of thing, right? Except, he then says, the head of Christ is God, meaning God the Father. Paul says the head of the man is Christ, the head of the wife is the husband, but the head of Christ is God the Father. If leadership or the headship of a relationship means that it is a relationship of superior and inferior, then we have to claim that there is a qualitative difference between God the Son and God the Father. If headship means that the Father is greater than the Son, then we've got a problem. Because the Bible is clear about something, and that is Jesus is God. He is fully and equally worthy of all praise and worship. He is God. He is not the Father. He is not the Holy Spirit. That's how the Trinity works. And yet he is God. There is no qualitative difference between Father and Son. And yet the Son submits to the Father. Paul tells wives to follow the leadership of their husbands and illustrate what Jesus is like. Think of the cosmic Christ, the creator of all that has been created, the one for whom all things were created, the one who created all things. He created them because it was the will of his Father to create them. The cosmic Christ, the one who is reconciling all things to himself, the one who is making peace by the blood of his cross, that one died on the cross because it was the will of his Father that he die on the cross. That's why he prayed, "Not my will be done, I will submit to your will." So when Paul says, wives, submit to your husbands, he's saying, be like Jesus. In the relationship between Jesus and God, Jesus submits himself to the will of the Father. There's no lack of dignity in that. There's nothing servile about that. So wives, submit to your husbands and be like Jesus. Well, Paul then moves on to husbands, right? As would be expected in a household code. Verse 19, he says, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Now imagine with me that you're a member of New Colossae Church, right? You grew up in Colossae, you graduated from Colossae High School, you went on to Colossae Community College, you are Roman in every way, you're a citizen of the empire, you understand Roman culture is what you live and breathe, that you are thoroughly immersed in it. Everything about you is Roman. But then one day you hear about Jesus, and you actually believe his claims, he is who he says he is, and he did what he came to do. So you don't know much about Jesus, but you know that he is God, that he is the rescuer who came to rescue all of his people. And so you join New Colossae Church, and you're there one Sunday morning. Two guys come in. One guy's named Tychicus. The other is Onesimus. We'll talk about him in a few weeks. But they have a letter from this other guy named Paul. You know, Paul's an apostle. You've never met him. Most people in the church have. A couple of guys have. But you know he's important, that he's actually seen Jesus. He spent some time with Jesus. Jesus revealed some things to Paul. And so you're eager to hear his letter. So one of those two men get up. They read this letter from Paul to the entire church. And then they get to the part where it says this. Husbands, love your wives. At which point you're like, wait. What? What was that? What did he say? You're like, here. Husbands, love your wives. But why? Why would I do that? What? Why is Paul telling me that? See, as a Roman, you would have been very familiar with household codes. You would have been very concerned about running your household well, keeping your wife in line, keeping your kids in line, keeping your servants in line. But at no point have you ever been told to love your wife. See, we found a number of household codes in, you know, archaeologists. They found all these codes, and we've pieced them together. None of them instruct, outside of the New Testament, none of them instruct a husband to love his wife. He's simply to keep her under control. Remember, Paul is not focused on running a household well so much as he is honoring the cosmic Christ, the one for whom all things exist. When Paul tells husbands to love their wives, he is being completely and utterly counter-cultural. I mean, this is unheard of. Men and women didn't marry for love. They married for children. A Roman man needed a wife, a legal wife, so that their firstborn son would be the one to inherit all of his property. That was her only purpose. He was free to find love any other place that he chose. He never would have thought to find it in his wife. Paul says, no. Husbands, love your wives. Now, Paul's command for husbands isn't an emotional thing. He's not saying, husband, get all goo-goo-eyed whenever your wife steps into the room. Right? He's not saying, husbands, you need to look at your wife and find, you know, in her, just be overcome with passion and desire for her. Now, he would say those kinds of things. That's certainly part of what it means to be married. The writer of Hebrews tells us that we should honor the marriage bed. It's referring to the act of marriage, the physical, erotic part of married love. He certainly would say that. That's not what he's saying here. You can point to that elsewhere in Scripture, but that's not what Paul means. He tells husbands to love their wives, to engage in the active and unceasing care for her well-being. Now, in the Roman household codes, a husband was instructed to keep his wife under sufficient control so that she didn't disrupt the household. But do you see what Paul is doing? He's saying, husbands, loving your wives is not about controlling your wife, and it's not about getting her to do what you want her to do. It's about providing for her, caring for her unceasingly. It is about her well-being, not about your well-being. When Paul says love your wives, he is not concerned about the impact it has to you as a husband. He's concerned about the impact that you have on your wife as you love her. See, a wife is not the chief servant in a man's household. She is actually to be the center of his life and of his actions. Take a look at Paul's household code that he gave us in Ephesians. This is just the portion for husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. Paul says a man must love his wife as Jesus loved his church and died for her. You can't give up anything more than that. When Paul says to love your wives, that's what he's talking about. He's saying a man must wrap himself around his wife to shield her, to protect her, to provide for her, to care for her, to sacrifice for her, to defend her, to provide for her, to give up his life for her, to put aside his own desires for her. Now I ask you, who's the servant in marriage? Who's the one who is to serve the other for the rest of his life? It's the husband. If anyone is a servant in marriage, it is the husband who serves the bride, just like Jesus came to serve his church. That's the example. You know, if you've ever heard me in a wedding, give the wedding homily, you should have noticed that I spend much more time addressing the groom than I do the bride. It's intentional. The groom has the greater responsibility in the marriage. Now, Paul says a wife must submit to her husband. The man who is commanded by God to live his life for her, to give up everything for her. Here's how G.B. Care said it. He said, if a wife is asked to submit, it is to the husband's love, not to his tyranny. Submission in marriage isn't about who's in charge, but it's about who gets to sacrifice the most. A husband leads his wife and his family, not as a dictator whose whims must be obeyed without question, but he leads his wife as one who is serving his wife. As a husband lovingly leads his wife, as he sacrifices for his wife, he's being like Jesus. A wife is like Jesus by submitting. A husband is like Jesus by giving up everything for her. That's why Paul told the Ephesian men to love their wives as Christ loved the church. See, marriage was created by God to be that picture. He says, husbands, goes on, love your wives as Christ loved the church. He says, and do not be harsh with them. Now that word, harsh, means don't become embittered by them. Don't let your wife's behavior control whether you're in a good mood. Think of the example here. Lack of submission or ungodly behavior on the part of a wife does not diminish in any way a husband's responsibility to love his wife, to care for her. The standard, the decisive factor in loving one's wife isn't the wife, it's Jesus' love for his wife. Husbands, you get to stop loving your wives as soon as Jesus stops loving his. It's not going to happen. That's why he willingly died for her. See, one of the purposes for which Paul wrote this letter to the Colossians is to encourage the young church to correct the false teaching by pointing them to Christ. You know, the same applies to us. We're a young church. We're just a couple years old or so. We're being hammered regularly by false teaching. Now, praise the Lord, I don't think it's false teaching inside the church, right? We don't have someone in here trying to sway us, turn us away from Christ. But our culture is constantly hammering us on this issue. We're regularly told that marriage is optional. You have all the benefits of marriage. You don't have to actually be married. And if you do get married, it's temporary. It didn't work out. Sorry, maybe next time. We're told that marriage can be reinvented in any way that we choose. We can make marriage whatever we want it to be. It doesn't have to be marriage. It can be something like marriage that we call marriage. Ladies, you're constantly being told that following the leadership of a man is somehow servile. Nobody ought to tell you how to spend your time or spend your money. You're a woman. Stand up for yourself. As if following the leadership of another precludes the idea of standing up for yourself. Men, you're constantly being mocked in popular television shows, in commercials. You know the commercials. We all laugh at them, right? They make fun of men as if men are a bunch of buffoons who are lazy or incompetent, right? Stupid. Yet deep down inside, we know that it's actually not funny. And yet it's not just those outside the church who are hammering us with false teaching. Sometimes Christians can give us a false sense of what marriage is supposed to be. Marriage is all about you getting a nice car, in a nice house, in a nice neighborhood, in a nice tax bracket, so that you could be a good example, a productive member of society. That is the pinnacle of marriage. Live a good life. That's what some think of marriage. You know, if the Colossians were told to have marriages that were countercultural, then so are we. See, our marriages ought to reflect who we value and what we value. This is seen in how we relate as husband and wife. It's also seen in how we spend our time and our money. Now, do you see the purpose of marriage that Paul is giving here? Paul is instructing us to live in a way that is honoring to Jesus, the one for whom all things exist, including marriage. Marriage isn't for us. Marriage is for Jesus. Has very real, very tangible benefits to us, but marriage isn't actually about us. You see, when a husband loves his wife and sacrifices for her, when a wife submits to willingly following the leadership of her husband, they are a picture of Christ in the church. Both the husband and the wife are called to be like Jesus. A husband loves his wife and so represents Jesus. A wife willingly follows her husband and so represents Jesus. Romans 5 says something interesting. He says that God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. See, marriage is this amazing thing that God has given to us to show us what he is like. In marriage, we're supposed to see what God is like. We're supposed to see the cosmic Christ and the love he has for us. Despite our sin and our rebellion against him, Jesus came for us. Despite our lack of love for him, Jesus came to love us, to rescue us from our sin. See, God did that. We deserve the opposite, yet God came to make us his people. You know, if you're married, whether you're a husband or a wife, Paul's saying live for the cosmic Christ. Live for the one that for whom all things exist. Husbands, honor Jesus by loving your wife like he loves his wife. Wives, submit to your husbands and honor Jesus by submitting like Jesus submits to his Father. If you're single, honor Jesus by being the man who would love his wife or by being the woman who would submit to her husband. Everything was created by Jesus and for his glory. So let's make sure we do everything for his glory, everything that we do. You see, in marriage, in the marriage relationship, we're supposed to love each other like we love no one else on earth. Marriage is the only relationship on earth, the only relationship that is designed to be sexual. The type of love husbands and wives have for each other is different qualitatively from any other kind of love out there. See, marriage is unique. Through marriage, we're supposed to get a glimpse of God's covenant love for us, God's eternal faithfulness for us. Sometimes we're a bad picture of that. Lots of times I make mistakes in being that representative. And yet through marriage, we get a glimpse because we know how marriage is supposed to be. We get a glimpse of what God is actually like. We see his faithfulness. We see his covenant love. We see the lengths to which he would go to rescue us. We see how deep the Father's love for us, how vast beyond our measure. There is nothing God wouldn't do to rescue us, including dying for us. So when we look at marriage, that's what we celebrate. That's what we strive for, to be the kind of people worthy of God's love. We'll never make it, which makes being his people all the more extraordinary. Marriage is a picture of Christ in the church. Whether you're married or single, strive to honor Jesus in all that you do. And let's do that together.